It had to happen eventually, and it's happened now. We have found a sponsor. The sponsor for this week's episode is Our Accidental Universe, which is Chris Lintott's new book. It's out and available to pre-order now, and it'll be with you sometime after the 21st of March, which is next Thursday, if you're listening to this, kind of close to when it was recorded. If you want a copy of the book, please do get the pre-orders in. They make an enormous difference. And we thank Chris very much for kindly sponsoring this podcast. Hello, everybody. It's episode 152. I'm Matt in Manchester. I'm joined by Matt in Yorkshire somewhere. Matt Yorton, hello.
Ooh, Greater Manchester, Matt.
Oh,
Ramsbottom.
Oh, he's Bury. Sorry, he's close.
Bury,
to
yeah.
Okay.
Yep. How are we doing, mate? You all right?
I'm very well, apart from being useless at geography and knowing where podcasters live. Although in my defence, we haven't heard from you for ages, so we're very pleased to have you back, even if I've forgotten where you live. And we've drafted in a ringer this week as well, because he's been going to some games. And as you may just have heard, he's got a book out. So he's keen to publicise that as often and as loudly as he possibly can. So he's decided to join us this evening. Chris Lintott is here, everybody. Hello, Chris.
Hi, I'm in Lower Manchester, otherwise known as Oxford. So just down the road from you.
Slightly down the road. See, I knew that. And then I didn't go with it, which is probably foolish on my part. We got quite a lot to cover. We got a good result, a bad result, an unknown future result, and discussion about how many points we've just been deducted this very afternoon. So shall we start on a high with beating Dartford 4-1? I think you two were there. Tell me things about this game, one of you, immediately.
We weren't very good, I think, is probably where to start. There was 10 minutes, which we'll spend a lot of time talking about. Matt, I don't know what you thought, but where we were great, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But for the first half, I think there was a dodgy tackle that could easily have been a card and possibly a red card a few minutes in. They hit the post within the first 10 minutes. They had the better chances. We had more of the play probably in the first half, but we didn't really look like doing anything of it. And then once we went 3-0 up, we decided to go back to playing that way as well. And so after the magic 10 minutes at the start of the second half, we went back to giving them quite a lot of ball, quite a lot of space. Their goal came at a time when we were looking really nervous. There was then an offside decision that they then put the ball in the back of the net. Whether they would have done if the whistle hadn't gone, I don't know. But the entire crowd and the team felt nervy. And at 3-2, we were losing that. So thank God it was just 3-1. And then we saw it out okay. But maybe I'll give the team the last 10 minutes and the 10 minutes at the start of the second half when miracles happen. And we looked really good. Like, that was the flukiest 4-1 I've seen, and I've been a Torquay fan for a long while.
It did look that way. To me, I saw the highlights, because I wasn't there, I didn't make it down. It's funny you should mention their offside, because I'm just going to say about this, about how did it look in the ground, because I've seen the video, and there is no way, that three of ours are playing him on. There is no earthly way he's offside. And as for the whole, would he have stuck it in? I don't really know what else either Halstead or whichever the defender was could have done about it. So it could potentially have been a save by the bell.
I mean, it is true they stop when the whistle, you can see on the highlights, they stop when the whistle goes. So there may have been a miracle save, or who knows? Halstead may have closed him down and prevented a shot on goal, like he should have done for the first of their goals. In fact, the only one they scored. So you don't know. But yeah, 3-2 and them coming back, and we would have been in serious trouble, I think.
Looking at another slough of somehow managing to throw a three, score three at home and lose anyway. Yeah. Matty, what?
Yeah, it wasn't a 4-1 game for me. It was 4-1 doesn't represent the type of game it was for me. Like Chris just touched on there, we just weren't very good. And I think Dartford lost their heads in that. What was it? 3 goals in 6 minutes. They absolutely lost their heads. But apart from that 6-minute period, it was a pretty even game. Again, at 3-1, we did look nervous. We were starting to get penned in a bit, which is classic Torquay, 3-1 up, 3 goals in 6 minutes, and then you end up looking nervous, even though you're the team that's 3-1 up. It was closer than what the scoreline suggested. Dartford, they could have been a couple of goals up. Second, you could have gone into half time 2-0 down, and you wouldn't have argued with that at all, really. I think they had a chance sort of early on, and it looked like Halstead had saved it, but it bounced straight back off the post. And then you're thinking, right, okay, you know, here we go. But yeah, apart from, you know, just really sort of, I mean, the conditions didn't help. It was a real sort of dogged performance. It was a Stonewall penalty. I think that penalty on Jarvis, it was, you can't argue with that. Ref
and
got
a good
that right.
Penalty by him as well. He struck it really well.
Yeah, I was about to say it was a great finish, great penalty. And then the second goal was really well worked as well. I thought, you know, it was straight from Halstead, straight down into the corner, keep it in, flash the ball across the box, and Duke was there to smash it into the back of the net.
It's actually better than that as well, because there's a, I don't know who it is in the box, but there's a, not quite a dummy, but there's actual awareness of where teammates are, and
it was a little flick on, wasn't it? It was a little sort of flick across, it's come across and just outside the 6-yard area, and he's just sort of flicked it. I think it might have been Collins, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and that whole move, that sort of few minutes, the whole team looked completely different. They were running off the ball. They were keeping an eye out for each other. They were trying to make stuff happen. They frankly looked like they were having fun, which has been absent for a long while.
That second goal is made it look easy, and it's frustrating because that's how easy it can be. And that's, you know, that's the sort of goal you can score. Or this
team made me think of the last National League South season, right? Mm. Where we used to do that stuff all the time, and the team would just run it, you know, look like they were playing park football and running rings around people. And for 5-6, I love every report about this game has a different number for how quickly we scored the three goals, which is quite fun. But in the time is difficult. So, you know, who knows? So in however long it was, for the 3 hours we spent between the first goal and the third goal, like, we looked like we were in a different season playing a different game. It was great. And that second goal, the third goal, I can't remember the third goal. Was the third goal really scrappy?
The third goal came from a corner, didn't it? And then we had a chance. It got knocked out for a corner, and then it's come back in. Keeper's spoiled it, and I think Ash was there to pounce and knock it in for the third. So he was quicker off the mark for that one.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the keeper should have held it, probably, you'd think. He hadn't just shipped a couple of goals.
He should have done it. Yeah, he sort of parried it, and it ended up spinning like by his boots, and then Ash was just quicker to it. He couldn't quite turn himself and get onto the ball, and Ash was quicker to the ball there. And going back to that, what you said, Chris, about that tackle, I think it was the Jarvis tackle that you're referring to.
Yeah, maybe. That's right.
Yeah, so I was stood right in front of that, and I think it was 0-0 at the time.
It was really early on. Yeah.
And I sort of, he made the tackle, and I'd sort of turn around to a mate I was stood on the pop side with, and sort of harsh, quick intake of breath, as if to say he's got away with that, because he was line side with the ref, meaning that sort of like his back was towards the ref as he went in. So the ref didn't actually see any sort of studs. But from our position, you can see both feet well off the ground, all studs showing towards the pop. And I think he was lucky. I don't even think he got booked for it, to be honest.
No, the ref basically let stuff go all day, which is usually, you know, I don't have a problem with that. But you could definitely, with a different ref, if you do that in the first few minutes when they want to make it clear they're on the pitch, then we could have been down to 10, I think, pretty early on.
He definitely could have brandished a card for him. And I think that, you know, I've seen a few people say sort of like moaning about the ref on Saturday, but I, in all honesty, I thought the ref was quite good. Yeah, okay, he got in the way a few times, but he got most of the calls, if not all the calls, right. He got the penalty decision right. People were shouting for a penalty when I think Ash put a high boot in the... In the 6-yard area, and one of their lads went down. If you put a boot up above waist height anywhere in there, it's gonna be a booking. So, you know, I think he got those decisions right. And like you say, letting stuff go, which is nice. I like seeing referees that let stuff go and try and sort of encourage a bit of physicality to the game, you know, and not make the game about them. The refs have a good game when you don't talk about the ref. So I was quite surprised when I saw a few people talking about that, to be honest. But yeah, he was quite good.
Didn't sound like he'd done anything wrong from the radio. You know what the radio's like. They often, I listen to the Torquay one, they often sort of bang on about, oh, the referee's this, referee that. Didn't really mention him. So I presume that on Saturday that Jim...
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. And we got a penalty, so he must be good. But yeah, so it was just like genuinely, it felt like 10 minutes of some other season dropped in the middle of what was, you know, the dross that we've had for most of the year. So yeah, and it didn't seem to be, you know, so then people, was it because there was a great team talk? Was it because we came out and set up differently? I don't think so. We came out pretty much as we were at the end of the first half. People, you know, the players are trying. It's not like they've switched off. So they came out and they tried. I think we got the penalty early. Dartford panicked and we, for 10 minutes, had the run of the park, and or 6 minutes or 4 minutes or however long it was. And we took advantage, and it was magical. And it was one of my favourite things that's happened in a Torquay game for years, because it generally felt like we'd got away with something and been gifted, and we didn't screw it up despite trying. But I think having had Tuesday, I don't know if you want to move on yet, but having had Tuesday's result, suddenly Saturday looks like it makes much more sense, right? That we had this mad 10 minutes. If we'd won on Tuesday, we'd be thinking, yeah, I think Saturday would look a lot more rosy, and we'd forget that actually we were outplayed by Dartford more or less for certainly the first half and bits of the second.
Yeah, I think it was all about confidence. So sort of first half, so I'm going to talk about Lewis Collins a little bit here. So Lewis Collins' first half was absolutely woeful. He looked like a shadow of a football player, a shadow of a man trying to play football. He was making mistake after mistake after mistake. You could see what he was trying to do. You could see what he was trying to pull off. But he just didn't have the confidence to execute it. Now, second half, when we're 2 or 3 nil up, Lewis Collins is in front of the pop site. He Cruyffs someone and nutmegs them at the same time. Now, the first half, he wouldn't have even tried something like that. So for me, when he arrived, I think Collins was a good player. He'd had quite a few Football League appearances for Newport. He was quite highly rated amongst Torquay fans. Tell me if you disagree, but there was a player in there. And for me, I'm sure he played up front for Newport. I'm sure he was a striker for them. I'm sure he's a front man for them. And he seems to have come to us and he's just been drained of confidence. He's been played out of position. He's just been sort of butchered and buried into the ground for me. And he's the only youngster. He's 22. And I think that for him, it's all about confidence at the moment. So he was all over the shop first half, second half. As soon as he got a couple of goals, as soon as he got that lead, you could see his confidence up straight away. And I think he just needs that little bit of encouragement for me. And he needs to be playing higher up, potentially as a striker, potentially, I mean, put him up there with Jarvis and Ashley, what he can do for me. But there was a few players out of position. I know Mox was moved across to centre-back, and Boyd, you can see they're not used. You can see Moxie isn't used to playing centre-back. Equally, Boyd isn't used to playing in that position, I don't think.
Mox looked off the pace in a way that he doesn't normally.
Boyd, for me, like, you could sense Moxie's frustration with Boyd, especially in that first half, and how Boyd, he wasn't creating the space for Moxie to pass into quick enough. And we all, Moxie's not the fastest player in the world, is he? Bless him. But he was making the right runs, just too late. And then the option wasn't on. And then Moxie was getting frustrated with him. And he wasn't, when he got that right, they were linking up well. So what happened was, you know, Moxie's, he's trying to look for Boyd. He's ended up playing sort of cross-field balls in the end. He doesn't want to play out to Boyd because he's not showing to him early enough. But I think that's just practice. That's sort of getting used to playing with each other. Moxie is simply running off a football brain as opposed to his body at the moment. That's how he's carrying on. You know, we talk of players getting older in their sort of twilight years of their career, and it's their brain, the football brain, that keeps them going. His reading of the game, his basic understanding of where and what position to be in, is what is keeping him going at the moment. Class player, love him. But he's yeah, you can see you could sense his frustration definitely on Saturday with some of the players that he were around him.
Yeah, the other person who looked frustrated, although not till later in the game, was Jarvis, was taken off. I think it was 3-1 when he came off. I think they scored as we were about to make the change, I think. And he looked deep. I mean, who knows? You can't really read this and so on. But both when he went off and when they came over at the end to clap us on the pop side, he looked thoroughly like he didn't want to be there. And I don't know whether that's he, you know, you're winning, you want to be part of that, and you get taken off for reasons that aren't your fault, or whether, you know, he just feels this isn't his fight. I know it's a data point. I wouldn't read too much into it, but it's a podcast, so I guess we talk about it, right, Matt? That's the usual procedure.
He's got to know that he doesn't matter what happens to the club, he won't be here next year.
Yeah.
So to a degree, he's sort of working his notice. Does he care? Is what he does in the next 2 months going to have any impact at all on where he plays next year or how much money he earns? Probably not. You know, teams will inevitably have tried to sign him. He will be on teams' radar, teams that are presumably in the National League. I don't see him playing in League Two. You know, Yeovil have probably seen him play enough to know whether they want him or not.
He's going to be one of the first players out the door, isn't it, when that time comes, I think. And you know, with 9 games to go, I think he knows his time at Torquay is coming to an end. But yeah, so, you know, and sort of, yeah, I suppose maybe what you're trying to get at is that his body language has changed maybe over the last sort of, you know, he was out injured for a long time, wasn't he? And things haven't gone quite right this season. And he's found himself in a position where he probably is thinking, I'm too good for this team, this division, and the position that we're in. So that probably does sort of come across maybe without sort of unknowingly, perhaps. You know, I don't suppose he wants to disrespect the club at all, but he looks too good for us, I think, at the moment. Yeah.
He looked happy enough when he scored. So, you know, it's not that he's checked out, but it's got to be weird. I think we don't talk in all the discussions about what's going on the field, we don't talk enough about what's going on off the field. It must be weird for the players. Like, never mind whether it affects them, it's good or bad, or what their careers are. It's just got to be weird going in, wondering if you're going to get paid, wondering who's in charge, wondering what's going on, suddenly noticing that 1,000 extra fans have turned up for a Saturday and are much louder. Like, all of this is going to be strange. And, yeah, they're trying to do their job while we have a loud and or quiet freak out around them. And it's just got to be weird. I'm not surprised if people are reacting differently or emotionally to what's going on.
You'd have to hope that the first thing that that somebody in authority has done is assured the players they will be paid no matter what.
Yeah,
we have reserves to do this. We've got whatever the first priority is, paying you guys and everything else. And then once we've sorted that, we'll worry about paying the gas bill or whatever else. So you'd kind of hope that, I mean, any normal business, that would be first thing that the leadership would do. Torquay football clubs, but Torquay especially, not a normal business. So who knows? But you'd kind of hope that that has been done. You know, that conversation has been had with all of the guys en masse. So
it's a young squad as well, isn't it? And when you look across the squad, it is a young squad. It's an inexperienced squad. And like you just said, Chris, these sort of 1,000 extra fans turning up, the pressure's almost, I suppose it's not risen, but it's changed in a way, and there's a different type of pressure to play under now, as opposed to the expectation at the start of the season. So it's how they rise to that now over the next 9 games, and they realise what's at stake, and it's getting that across to them. So, I mean, with all the anger and the protests and stuff, I don't think for 1 minute personally that any of that was really aimed at them.
No,
and you'd like to think that they understand and they get that. I mean, in terms of football, they're just not good enough to play for Torquay United, most of them. And as harsh as that sounds, it's true. But it's not necessarily their fault. They were the ones that were recruited. They were the ones that have been asked to play and put the shirt on for us.
And you'd like to think that they can step up for the cause now. But yeah, it must be a weird situation for them. Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Stepping up to the plate for the cause was not something that happened on Tuesday night, from the sounds of it, on the basis that Taunton, a team that we usually play in our first or second pre-season friendly as a warm-up to sort of actually seeing, you know, whether trialist J and K can kick a ball in the correct direction or not. They turned up at Plainmoor, did, so far as I could see, virtually nothing at all and beat us 3-0. I don't know what you guys thought, but I mean, that was at least as much of a freak result as us beating Dartford 4-1 on Saturday. They had that one stupid bloody thing that rolled under Housted's body, a long throw that was flicked at the near post and somehow found its way in, and a 35-yard blaster that bloke will hit 20 of those in his career. 19 of them will end up outside the ground and one of them will end up in the back of the net. Last night, so someone that flew in. You know, which is to take nothing away from the guy. It's a great strike and all that, but like, if he had that in his locker...
It's to take quite a lot away from the guy.
No, I don't think, you know, it's not like...
I mean, I like the cliche, but just to be clear, you said it was luck. Let's take it away from him. He's playing for the opposition. I think this once, let's take it away from
okay,
him.
But
let's say he was lucky. Fine.
He's a complete freak. He's hammered the ball. He should
possibly
hit the ball as hard as he possibly can. And for some reason, it's ended up in the back of the net rather
So I didn't see it, just to be clear, because I was going to log onto the stream, but we were three... By the time I was free, we were 3-0 down. And you know what? I decided not to. So what you're saying is, if the message from Saturday is that we weren't as good as the score makes us seem, you're saying we weren't as bad last night.
I think I'm unique in the perspective of, I don't actually think we were that bad at all. I don't think Taunton were very good. I don't think we were that bad. We were blunt. We weren't very good in either penalty area, which I will grant you is quite a lot of the game. But I've seen teams deservedly get beaten 3-0. I've seen Torquay lose 3-0 deservedly. I've seen Torquay win 3-0 deservedly. And the gulf between the two teams is wider than it was last night. What last night was a 0-0, a turgid, awful, non-league South 0-0 that actually finished 3-0 to Taunton, as far as I can see. A lot of people are extremely upset about it. A lot of people in various of the sort of supporters groups that I talk to and observe and various things, they are unhappy about how we played. We didn't pass it very neatly, but then we're a non-league South side that employs the worst professional footballers in England. Some weeks they're not going to be able to pass straight. You know, yeah, we lost 3-0. If we played that game again, it would probably be 1-0 to us. And then if we played it again, it would be 0-0. And then if we played it again, it would be 1-1. And it was just like a nothing game, as far as I could see. I know, Matt, you watched it as well. I don't know if you agree with any of that or not.
I think we played pretty poorly, to be honest. And I think we were trying to do stuff that our players at our level, the players we've got, aren't capable of doing. And B, playing out from the back on a surface that is that heavy, that is that sodden, that is that wet. What are we doing? And to put the pressure on someone like Ollie Tomlinson, I mean, you know, he was getting pelters last night. And I think, personally, through no fault of his own, because he's been told to play that way. He's been told to play out from the back and he put under pressure. And we just weren't good enough to try to pull off the things we were trying to pull off. As soon as we went, we were playing out from the back. We were under pressure. I think we conceded a corner, a couple of corners. As soon as we sacked that off and went long with Halstead getting it up to Jarvis, we won a corner straight away. And as soon as we stopped trying to do that and try and tuck ourselves up, we looked better than what we were. But we were trying to do things that they were trying to play in a certain way that they just couldn't pull off. And I think you've got to go back to basics. We were playing into Taunton's hands in that respect. Go back to basics. You know, I know we were riding a bit of a wave from Saturday and we had a 4-1 win and this was it. This is the turning point and stuff. But really,
I think that we're a team that had won, what, 1 in 14? Taunton had won 2 in 21, something like that. And just, yeah, you don't become good or after 1 win in 14. And yeah, it was just disappointing all around. I think we just got what we were trying to do wrong last night. And yeah, I really felt for Ollie Tomlinson, and I know he got, like I said, I know he got a few pelters and whatnot, but he was asked to play a certain way. They were asked to play out from the back, and we were just putting pressure on ourselves and unnecessarily, I think.
Would you revert back to, as a general rule for the remainder of the season, would you revert back, do you think, to just humping it as long as we possibly could? Which was a criticism of
But with two up front, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than
Jarvo on his own.
Yeah.
Do we start?
Yeah, I'd say like so.
Corey, whatever he's called. If we're going to do
Ash
that,
is
Ash better off the bench? And you start Jarves and Duane and just get it up to him.
I think so. At this level, yes, because, you know, we watch Premier League teams do it. I watch quite a bit of Championship football and I see it there as well. And even at Championship level, teams sometimes struggle to do it and put themselves under pressure. And I don't get this fad that it seems to now be filtering down the leagues of playing it out from the back. And it's just, for me, it's like, understand the level you're playing at, understand your capabilities. If it's on, play it. If it's on, if it looks fine, if it looks safe, play it. But to try and play it as a tactic or to try and play it because it looks nice or it looks pretty, not at this level. Not at this level. And people understand that. If people understand if you hoof it into Rosette at this level more than they would in the Premier League or the Championship.
Hmm.
And it's just so unnecessary for me. Doesn't even the idea.
We also know that we're going to concede in most games because, you know, our defence is what it is, and which means we need to score a couple of times, which means we need as many goal-scoring chances as we can get. And I think, you know, it'd be nice to think that we could play creative football and win 3 or 4 nil. That's not going to happen. We don't have time to muck about, really. And I think, I think we need to be more attacking than we were in the first bit of the season. I think we could throw a couple of players up, whoever it is, and switch it round, as you say. But I think it's a case of getting the ball to people. I mean, we saw what happened. That magical second goal on Saturday started with a long ball, right? Then there was some creativity, right? So it doesn't have to be dull, right? We're not 80s Wimbledon. We're not putting it in the penalty area for the big lad to put his head on it. But like getting it quickly into their final third is a good idea.
Yeah, get it down into the corners, play the overlap, and it works. And we saw that work on Saturday. So why we tried to do it last night, especially on the surface as well. It was wet on Saturday. It was heavy on Saturday. It was heavier last night. And then we're trying to do stuff like that. So it's a combination of a few things, isn't it? It's a combination of A, the pitch, B, the tactics, and C, the players not being good enough to be able to do it. And we just put ourselves under unnecessary pressure. Play it more direct. And we saw that on Saturday, like you say, with the second goal against Dartford. When you do that, when you get it down into space, when you get it down into the corners and you whip a ball across the box, things happen. It takes the momentum out of the game as well, I think. You're trying to play it out from the back, takes momentum, takes the impetus out of the game, takes the tempo out of it. I think it's detrimental to the team as a whole and what they're trying to achieve. So I don't know why Downsy has got them doing that. Really don't.
If you've not signed the players, and this is my big bugbear with a lot of the things about, oh, we should change this, change that, change the other. Surely as a football manager, you have to go into a season and think, right, how do we play this year? And for the millionth time on this podcast, I am going to advocate us taking the Woking method, which is to sign 18 blokes who all look like Duane. They are all 6'5" and beyond, 17, 18 stone and beyond. And they have no talent. They're just massive. They kick you about all over the place. And somehow that's enough kind of to win at non-league level, that will get you into the playoffs.
Yeah, it will. And it's horses for courses, isn't it? I think at our level. But the thing is, Matt, as well, you get teams like that even at sort of League One level. Mm-hmm. I think last season I went to Accrington Plymouth, and Accrington were just a team of players you've just described. Not really that good at football, but physically they were specimens, athletes who were physical and strong and quick and fast. They couldn't really play football that well, but they were employed to do a job, and we haven't got that. We're too lightweight defensively. How many times do you want to say it? I mean, you've said it so many times on the pod this season. We need players like that at the back. We've been banging that drum for so long, and it's just not happened. And we're continuing to pay the price for it, for not recruiting there in that position.
Yeah, they are. We're up every week. Again, this is another one of those, no disrespect, we're up against blokes who go to work all week. And these are not brain scientists or rocket surgeons. These are builders' mates and van drivers and people who move refrigerators around all day. And so they're big, solid blokes, and then they come and play football. So when you show them Ollie Tomlinson, who I think could be a decent centre-back at kind of non-league level, I think he's smart enough to be able to do it. It's just a question of, can he spend 6 months down the gym getting bigger? You show Ollie Tomlinson to one of these big units who humps stuff around all week, and he goes, well, I'll just knock him about. And the referees at this level aren't going to give you that protection. He's not going to go falling over and get a free kick every time. So they just knock him out of the way. And that's not really his fault. He's been brought in to play against these players. Whereas if we had 2004's Guy Branston at the back, he would be doing the exact opposite. And it, you know, the same thing, but the other way around. And, you know, it really has got to be horses for courses. And if you're going to play a nice fancy out from the back and whatever the hell else all the tactical nonsense is, you've got to spend all summer signing those players to do that. You've got to sign Lemon and Little and Whitfield and players like that. You can't sign whoever the hell plays Russ Collins and Stobbs.
Well, it's a makeshift back four as well, isn't it? We're doing it on a makeshift. It's not like we're consistent, you know, we've got a consistent back four or a consistent lineup in defence. So, you know, it's not even, you know, we can't even do it like that as well. We've not got the players for it. So, yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah.
Get it up, get it long, get it done.
So direct. Yeah.
That's probably a good sign about what we're going to go do against Tonbridge on Saturday. I think we're pretty much all agreed. Put the big lads up front and smack it long at Tonbridge on Saturday.
Yes, based on our extensive analysis of Tonbridge and their form of playing.
You know, you say this. I've done extensive research on Tonbridge, by which I mean 8 seconds before we started recording, I went on Flash Scores and had a look at how they've got on recently.
How they got on recently, Matt?
I'll tell you. Thank you for asking. Of their last 10, they've won 3, drawn 2, and lost 5, which isn't a great record.
Very much better than our record, for example.
Is that? Give me a second, I'll say, because this I didn't look up, and it would have been really neat if I had, wouldn't it? But
yeah. Well, we know. I'm pretty sure we've won 1, yes?
We have. We've got 6 points from 10 games. So, yeah, I don't think we've won more than 1. One win.
1-1, drawn 3, yeah.
And so lost 6. So there's not a great record for Tonbridge, but I think they're a little bit unlucky. Just looking at the numbers they've got here, I think they're a little bit unlucky because their goal difference over that period is only -2. And to have only picked up 11 out of 30 points, but only have a -2 goal difference, when it wasn't like there was a freak. They didn't win one game 6-0 and then the others they were useless in. They've scored 15 and conceded 17. Which over a season is a goal difference of like -11, which really ought to be enough to see you well into the safety zone. But the points they've picked up over the course of the season will probably see them relegated.
They've picked up points against teams maybe you'd expect them to. Dover, looking at this, Eastbourne, Borough. They've got a win against Chippenham, but outside of that, they're sort of losing and drawing games, aren't they? albeit by a goal, maybe two. But yeah, I mean, that comes back to the question about, you know, what you said at the start, Matt, are we in a relegation fight? Absolutely, we are now. 100%. So, you know, we're looking at, you know, we knew the 10 points were coming, whether it was this season or next season. You know, we sort of thought, well, if it does come this season, then we need to start getting a few wins. But can you imagine, had we not got the 3 points on Saturday, what that minus 10 would be looking like tonight? It's quite horrendous, really.
Yeah, I think we'd be in the drop zone. Are we going to get three against Tunbridge on Saturday? That's the question. Are we going to move somewhere towards safety? I think we need about another 7 or 8 points. If we get three of them on Saturday, that does really rather ease the burden.
Does feel gettable, doesn't it? I mean, I spent all of last season going, we can't possibly go down, can we? But, you know, we don't need that many. I don't know. Do you want predictions? 2-2. I think we'll go 2-0 up and then stop.
And then stop, okay.
Well, the thing is as well, you're looking at, I know, like, when you read the table, you look at the amount of games that Taunton and Truro have got in hand, but the amount of games they're going to have to try and play on their pitch in the space that they're going to have to play it in is that surely you would have thought that, you know, one of those two are going to implode at least. Was it 7 games in 15 days for Taunton or something just like that?
It's always dangerous to turn around and say, well, they won't win the points when they've got games in hand beneath you. But both of them doing it with that sort of schedule seems unlikely. Yeah. I also think, you know, it seems crazy to me that we're not in administration yet and we've been deducted 10 points because those are the rules. But Taunton are literally not paying their staff or the tax man, and apparently that's fine. So, yeah, I don't want Taunton to be in trouble. I have a lot of time for Taunton, the place, and you know, it's fun that they've got two sporting clubs that I have to pay attention to now. Yeah, no one wants a club to be in trouble, but you've got to think there's a reasonable chance that they're looking at the thin end of a 10-point deduction as well, which would be, you know, a very talky way to survive in the National League South, I feel. But if they don't get some of these games on, they're in trouble for more than climbing the table. They don't have income at the minute, and this is not good. It's hard to think. You look at the number of teams below us that would have to have a better run in than we do. We just got to keep scraping results. We've actually, you know, you think we need 7 or 8, Matt, points?
I think, yeah, I looked it up earlier. The note, as far back as I can go, again, on flash.
Yeah.
No team has ever finished in the bottom four with 48 points.
Right. So we've been bad in most of the games that the last four games, and we've picked up 5 points.
Yeah.
Hang on, Matt. Dulwich went down last season on 48, according to this. Dulwich, Dover, Weymouth all finished on 48.
48. The 48 has been enough, bearing in mind. Yeah. Going to have a minus 30 goal difference.
I think 48 will scrape it. I think 48.
But I just think, yeah, it's talky. We should always assume the worst is going to happen. But, you know, we don't need, this isn't a, we're all conditioned to expect a great escape scenario. That's, as soon as you say relegation, fine. We're all imagining we're going to be sitting on the bottom of the table with 8 games to go and go on some sort of run. Like, we just need to be slightly better than we were in January, which was probably the worst that we've been in my lifetime. Possibly not quite, because I don't remember the early 80s, but certainly close. I don't think we need to panic. I do think we need to win a couple of... We need to get some wins. Why not? No, I'm still going with 2-2, but I'll enjoy it 60 minutes in when we're 2-0 up and cruising.
Yeah.
They're going to score in the 74th and the 83rd minute, by the way.
I'm just going to write these down just in case. If you get these exactly right, I'm going to let you choose our Euro Millions numbers. And it's 2. Oh, okay, fine.
Do you want to know when we're scoring as well?
Yes, I do. Yeah, very much so.
Weirdly, the 27th and the 29th minute.
27 and 29th. See you. Okay, fair enough. You realize if this comes true, you will be the most in demand human being on the
front. For what, a week?
That a week's a long time in football. Really long time to be the world's most wanted man. Okay.
I think we knew, like I said, we knew the 10 points were coming. And I think when we spoke about this before, I'd much rather have had them this season now and try and get a couple of wins than have them at the start of next season, whatever that may look like. I just think starting a season on minus 10, it's grim for the whole season, whereas potentially it's grim for us for, what, 9 games?
We also know what, apart from relegation, but it means that if we get somebody who buys us soon and they start planning, we hopefully know what league we're in next year.
Yeah.
Like we don't, so we could get on with it. Like, and I think there are hard conversations that none of us want to have about next season, which, assuming we're in the National League South, but even if we get relegated, like, I think that whoever takes over has got a really hard decision to make as to whether we stay full time or not. And I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to think about Torquay not being a full time professional club. But from a business point of view, somebody's got to make that call.
Yeah. And I mean, the business side of it is way over my head, but I can't see us working on a part-time model or actually sustaining even the level we're at on a part-time model at the moment, because we've forever been a full-time professional club. I know teams in this division are part-time, but we're a different entity. So, you know, not any disrespect to the other teams in this league, but we are a different entity in that respect, I think, to a lot of the teams in this division. How Torquay United would look on a part-time model is quite scary for me to, like you say, to even think about. So,
well, because you don't think we'll do very well, or because there's a sort of state, like, do people go to play more because it's a full, people come to play more when we're winning. So being an unsuccessful part-time club, I agree with you, but you know, people turn up when there's something to cheer for.
To move us forward as a club, I don't think we could do it on a part-time, part-time model. I think if we were part-time, I think that's going to see us sort of languish, I think, and not really push forward as a club. So you look at National North, for example, when you look at teams that have languished there for years, you know, sort of Chester, Darlington, Hereford, Boston, all those sort of ex-Football League clubs. York were down there for a bit. Stockport took a few years to come out. I don't know if they went part-time or not. But I think that if we do go part-time, I think that we have to consign ourselves to this level. And I don't for the foreseeable future, if that's going to work. Matt, you may know how many sort of part-time teams are in the National League. I don't think there are that many.
Basically none, right?
Very few. I mean, Nottingham have gone pro.
So, potentially it could, you know, it could work in so much as you have the fans turning up, you have a football team coming out on the pitch and playing football. But in terms of success and moving the club forward, and climbing the ladder, I just can't really see that happening.
I mean, that all makes sense. I don't disagree with any of that. But my broader point was that whoever's coming in has got some really difficult decisions to make. And actually knowing that, like, trying to make those decisions with an outside chance of a playoff run that we probably wouldn't be successful in is not going to help, I think. Assuming somebody's going to buy us soon, which I'm still hopeful about.
Torquay at this level are quite a big club, and well, we are a massive club at this level. And I think if you're coming in and you're going to buy the club and you're looking at that, there are positives to look at. You could pick up that club. You could potentially run it on not that much money, I guess. Get it into the National League, get it ticking over, and then, you know, potentially look forward and get it into the EFL. But in how long someone would want to do that for, from a business perspective, no, it's easy to say they should be spending money, you know, and it was easy to say, you know, someone like Osborne, he was putting his hand in his pocket at the end of the day. But, you know, it's when it's, say, if it was your money or my money, it's a different prospect, isn't it? And you, I think anyone coming in would look at that and like you just said, Chris, from a business perspective and looking at it through business eyes, would be very, very careful about what they're doing and how they go about it.
The thing that really scares me, and I like that we're segueing into the depressing bit of the pod, which I'm sure was the idea. The thing that really scares me is that, like, I don't think there's a realistic 5-year plan for Torquay that leads to anyone who invests now getting money back. Like, if we'd gone 2 years ago, you'd say that your 5-year plan would be to get us into the Football League. And you can imagine people gambling on that. The trouble is, at the minute, I don't think there's a realistic... I mean, maybe, all right, clearly if you are a Hollywood actor or you're really willing to invest, then you've got you can bet on that. But a good 5 years for us looks like being mid-table National League, I think, which is horrific given where we've been and how I think about the club. And so you're looking for somebody either with a very long-term view... Like, here's the 10-year plan, here's the 20-year mm-hmm. plan to get Torquay back and to build up so that it's the central thing. Or you're looking for somebody who isn't looking for a plan that involves us climbing up. And I don't want that. No one wants that. We all want the millionaire to come in and say, sure, here's $1.5 million a year. And be great when we win the League Two. But... I don't know. I have no more information than anyone else, but those are the things that keep me up at 3 a.m. that I don't get why somebody would come in and lose $1 million a year. Unless it's Helen Chamberlain or Charlie Barker, both of whom should just pony up and buy the damn club with their showbiz millions.
Charlie's been squirreling it away, though, hasn't he? So
that's true. We do know that. Yeah.
I think. A, you need to not look at football club buying a football club as a business. It's not a business. It's a hobby. Anybody who buys a football club, with the obvious caveat that if you buy Real Madrid or Barcelona or Manchester United, you get such value of intellectual property that you couldn't possibly lose money. But anybody who buys a non-super elite football club has to accept that they're waving goodbye to their money because it costs so much to get.
Yeah, nobody buys a football club to make money at this level.
No, but people think they're going to.
Well,
right.
They shouldn't. Those people shouldn't be in charge of large volumes of money then, because I'm afraid you're just, you know, running a football club is a liability, not an asset.
Mm-hmm. So
that kind of is the first thing. And I think the idea of a 5-year plan, yeah, it's going to take us 5 years to get things like the academy functioning properly and yep. to get. I mean, the pitch really is as good as the pitch can be, as I understand it, without us going to a 750,000 to 1 million pound semi-synthetic number.
Deso pitch. We're not about to put a Deso pitch in at Playmore, are we? I mean, the pitch has had quite a lot of work done on it, hasn't it, in recent seasons?
Yeah, and that has been one area in which the incredibly Osborne has invested. I do understand because he's an idiot, but... Like, I don't understand how he spent £6 million for us to be 14 places lower than we were when he took over. How's he managed that? But because he spent it in the wrong place, it's without this becoming the rest of his politics or whatever it's called. I don't really know how we've doubled our national debt in the last 5 years and the country is worse off for it. And in the same way that I don't know how Osborne has spunked £6 million to make Torquay a worse football club. Like, there are ways of spending £6 million in 8 or 9 or 10 years, however long he's been here, that sees us in League Two now. And you go, well done.
I mean, on your first point, I'm restricted by the BBC from commenting on politics. On your second point, Osborne's an idiot.
Yes.
I think I can say that in pretty much any format and have been doing so. But we're not going to get him. And I'm still glad he's gone because this was coming. So, you know. And now I'm having the same conversation I've had with every Torquay fan I've met in the last 3 weeks, which is that I'm glad he's gone. I really, 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 really want somebody to come and buy us right now so that I can at least stop thinking about it. And I sort of, with a few exceptions, don't care who it is. I just like the uncertainty to end, please. So I can go back to what I'm now able to do that I wasn't when Osborne was in charge, which is worry about whether we're going to beat Tonbridge Angels or not.
Well, I've been worried for many years about whether we beat Tonbridge Angels.
Except... There were many years where we didn't think about them at all. And we need to not forget that.
It must have been just me then, because I would often sit up late at night wondering about if theoretically we ever played Tonbridge Angels.
I really like the idea that in the Leroy season in League One, you're there going, yeah, but Could they do it at Tonbridge Angels
on a, culture
on a Saturday
in
afternoon?
Tonbridge, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think someone said to me earlier, I'm sure they must have read it somewhere else, but someone said potential fixture for next season is Torquay United versus Bemerton Heath Harlequins. So you'll be worrying about them, Chris, instead of Tunbridge Angels next season.
I've seen us play Bournemouth. I've seen us beat Bournemouth. I've seen us beat Swansea.
Mm-hmm.
Beat Hull.
Well, so I've read this morning, I think there was someone in the TLAS group, Matt. Someone said that this time 19 years ago, we were playing Hull City.
Yeah.
19 years later, we're going down 3-0 at Playmore to Taunton Town.
Wow.
I was at that Hull game. That was fun. Mm-hmm.
I will have been there. No, that was the season because that was the year we went under Leroy. We went up, so I wasn't there for that. I was my first year was League One, so I won't have been.
I think
there.
It was Hull away that season was one of the early wins that made us think actually we might be good here.
Good. Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. So that's fucking that. So we've dissected Tunbridge, the 10-point deduction. I never actually said, I don't think, yes, we are in a relegation fight, you're right, but I think we'll survive it. Like, I'm very, very confident that we will not be going down. We just
didn't you say that this time last year?
No. No. Actually, when did we start being good?
It was about this time, about I this think. Time.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're right. It was about 10 game running, didn't we, where we were.
Okay, yeah, I may have said
it was
that.
About now. Yeah.
What are the chances I'm wrong? Two seasons ago, like virtually nil.
I got one more thing, which I feel like we've sort of ended up in a sort of the depressing morass of what on earth's going on at Playmore. But I just want to say, like, I opted out this season. Like, I've said this to many people. Like, I just couldn't face caring when Osborne was in charge, and I thought we were going to be terrible. Turns out I was right. And I for the first time in my life, I think, since I was about six, I just didn't look at scores and didn't really pay attention. And the moment the news broke, I have started paying attention, and I have missed so much caring about the score on a Saturday and going to games and catching up with people. And so if people have been staying away, I don't know, people who are staying away aren't listening to Talky Talk, but you know what I mean? But if you can make an extra game, like, genuinely, I went to back-to-back home games for probably the first time since the early 2000s, which makes me a very busy person and probably not a great Torquay United fan if you're one of the people who ticks off games gone to. But it's been great. And it is great, and we can get lots of people to go. And wherever we are, that, I hope, will continue to happen. The second thing I want to say off the back of that is that I think we should put two or three fans a season from your podcasting lot in the deep freeze from like August through to about now, and then you can get them out and then they can be enthusiastic about the last couple of months of the season. So I think we should have designated survivors, basically, like they have when the White House is going to get bombed and there's always somebody who can take over if something happens to the president and all the cabinet. We should have two or three talky talk people who are there if we have a terrible season, who could be roped in at this part of the season to be enthusiastic, because genuinely having a fresh perspective on it. Yeah, we were terrible and I really enjoyed it. Enjoyed the Averley game, even though we were terrible at that too.
I on the way out on Saturday, there were four Plymouth Argyle fans that were donning their scarves and their shirts, and I sort of collared them and I said, part of me felt like apologising, but also part of me wanted to thank them for being there, and they really enjoyed it. So what can you say? No.
It turns out going to football is great.
Yeah.
Going to football is fun, as is appearing on podcasts, which are presented by the Talking Talkie, which is a distinct organisation from Talky Talk, who you may have heard mentioned once or twice very recently in Chris's monologue there. He did not mean that. He didn't mean...
No, sorry.
Talky Talk. He meant that this is the Talky Talkie podcast. But that's okay. Yeah, I think it's a perfectly reasonable idea. And to be honest, if we go down, I'm wondering if I might volunteer to go into the deep.
There'll be a queue.
Yeah, well, I'm getting my name down early. I'm doing the Singaporean thing of putting my flip-flops right at the front and then going and sitting down so that I can be front of the queue for that. Because, yeah, like you, I wasn't avoiding scores, but I wasn't actually caring about what the score was. So I would sort of go and distract myself flying a drone or going to lunch or whatever. And then I'd look up the score at half time and go, oh, we're 2-0 down. Oh, I don't really care. I'm pissed off, but I don't
really care. So it was nice. Dartford actually was the first time for ages that I've kind of gone dancing around the house and been singing Torquay songs, sort of in the living room and shouting at the dog and annoying the neighbours and stuff by giving it Aaron Downes' Yellow Army in the road outside and stuff. So that was nice for those 10 minutes. That was lovely. If we could have more of that back, we could get bought by a consortium of local people headed up by Thea Bristow and somebody else. I don't really.
Yeah, but this time they should have lots of money.
Yeah, loads and loads and loads of money. Get Paulie B involved. He can be chair of the board or something. And then I really will be able to dance around the house just every day, generally, whether we're playing or not. Just generally pleased that we've got our club back, which is dangerously close to a nationalist piece of rhetoric that, again, Chris couldn't comment on for BBC reasons. So I think that has probably done, unless, Matt, you've got any other business.
No, I think we've covered all that, to be honest.
I have no other any other business other than please go to Tunbridge. Oh no, yes, I do. Buy tickets. They're trying to sell home tickets. They've advertised all three sets of home tickets, the remaining three fixtures. If you are going to go and you can buy them all in one go, I very strongly recommend buying all three now so the club has got the money, because my no knowledge, no sort of anything at all, but my very strong suspicion is that we are not a million miles away from being purchased, but we do need some cash to survive between now and whenever that happens. So get your money into the club as quickly as you can. If you're going, buy them anyway. And that's that. And I'm done. So I think I'm probably going to say thank you very, very much for giving up a lot of your evening to Matty Orton.
Thank you, mate.
And thank you ever so much for joining us from way down south, Chris Lintott.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to me for being here as well. We will see you in episode 153, which will be out sometime next week. Goodbye.